following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And I was away last weekend. I had to go to Florida to see Mom, so there was a rerun aired. I hope you still listened and enjoyed that one. It was a classic episode, the rabbit leg chicken wing episode. Frog's legs, also. Years and years and years of frustration have been torturing me with the size of my available garden space. I know I've talked about this before. I like to garden, and I have talked about my tiny bungalow up in tiny bungalow town, but I've never been able to really super successfully have a really the kind of garden I want up there because of all the animals. I don't really have like wide open space to garden in. So what I've been doing is growing stuff in pots on the patio, and we had to fence it in to keep out all the critters because there's a lot of critters up there. And so years of trial and error of figuring out, you know, what I could grow, what I couldn't grow, what I had to fence in, what I didn't have to fence in. Things that I grew had to be three things. They had to be animal proof, things animals wouldn't eat. They had to be shade tolerant because I don't get that much sun there. And they had to be drought resistant because I'm not there during the week. So for the unfenced in area, that basically comes down to resinous herbs, things like rosemary, thyme, lavender, kind of stinky stuff. That they won't touch. The deer, the groundhogs, the other animals, they won't touch those. Oregano is a good one too. They don't seem to like that at all. Lemongrass, they don't even know what to make of that. But, you know, I want to grow stuff other than that. I want some food, not just some herbs. So a couple of years ago, we found this old clawfoot bathtub in the woods. Someone had dumped it years ago in the woods. And so we dragged it out of the woods, got it somehow into the back of our car, brought it back to the house, and put it on the patio in this, like, raised stone bed we had made. Put the bathtub in there, and then I filled it up with dirt, and I started growing in it. So I've been growing greens in there for a couple of years, arugula, spinach, a couple other little things. And for the first couple of years, I just put like a sheet of chicken wire mesh over the top of the bathtub to keep out the animals. And that worked pretty well. And then while I was away, or during the week, I guess, Adam was up there and I was home, and he built like a really nice top for it, like a cage top. So now I can grow taller things. So that's really cool. But it's still not enough. Like, I'm still frustrated. I still want more garden space. So last summer, we found this old bed, this old wooden, like, twin bed frame. I think it had been part of bunk beds or something. And so we dragged that back to the house, and Adam turned that into, like, a pen. And then we wrapped that whole pen in deer mesh, in 7-foot-high deer mesh, and that's where I put my potted stuff, like my sugar snaps and tomatoes and leafy herbs and things like that. So that was better. That was better. But it kept out the animals. But it was never quite big enough. I never got enough direct sun. I was never able to, like, really irrigate it properly. And then this year, I went to grow stuff in there. And suddenly, there was this tree that over this winter, or I guess last summer, had gotten just tall enough so that the sun is completely blocked out of there now. And so nothing's growing in there. I planted a bunch of seeds in April, and the stuff in the bathtub grew nice and tall, and I'm already eating it, and the stuff in the fenced-in pen is like little dwarfy sprouts. So no sun. So what to do? Well, this tiny bungalow land is also run as a co-op, basically. It's an old socialist worker party place from years ago, and we run it as a co-op. So there's, I think, 70 houses, 50, 70 houses. There's a whole bunch of us. And last year, a bunch of us got together and said, let's start a community garden. Let's take some unused land that we have and make a community garden. So we kind of threw the idea around. We had some meetings. And we met with the community. And most people were very supportive, but oddly enough, there were some very vocal resistors, like people who really didn't want us to do this, which I thought was really strange. I mean, how could you be opposed to gardens? How could you be opposed to vegetables? I don't get it. But anyway, we got some money from the board, and it was all set. And one of my neighbors up there, this guy named George, who is the like total energizer bunny, nonstop worker, completely spearheaded the project. And very, very early this spring, he started working on it. He totally cleared out this whole, like, flat, swampy area that was the only ideal space to put it. And he built all the wooden planter boxes. And, like, he was amazing. He ordered all the dirt. He researched the drip system. Like, completely amazing. Did it all. This was, like, all before we even opened up the houses on April 1st. So we got up there to open the house. And I felt like I was one of the most vocal people about doing this, so I felt like I really had to pitch in. So for the last few weekends, except for when I was in Florida, I've been spending my entire weekend digging and hauling wheelbarrows full of dirt and rocks and mud, like up to my knees in mud, because it's been so wet in that spot from all the rain we had this spring, and it's a swampy area. We had to like drain it and clear it. I mean, it was like, I sort of know what being on like a chain gang must have felt like now, except that I could go home and shower and have dinner and a beer at the end of the day. But that's what I've been doing for several weekends now, is basically digging, hauling mud, rocks, dirt. And that's okay. I don't mind doing that at all. I mean, I like that kind of work. I like physical kind of work. And, you know, I was one of the ones who really wanted it, so I felt like I had to really help. So finally, after 2 months of all of this work, the boxes are in place. We got the dirt delivered. We got organic, you know, topsoil and compost delivered, and we filled in our boxes. It took like 10 wheelbarrow loads each, fill in our boxes, and we hooked up the drip irrigation system and finished the deer fence, and woo, we're done. The whole thing is done. And I was so excited that I was the first one to get plants in. I planted immediately. As soon as the fence was closed, I was planting, because I was planning ahead, and I started seeds at home in the winter in late February. So I already had little seedlings to get going on. And like I said, I had also planted seeds outside in April. So I have stuff. I'm already eating some of that stuff, but I already transplanted some of that. And, you know, now I have like a real garden. It's like I'm able to like really plant what I want to plant and do what I want to do, because I don't have to now worry about animals, and I don't have to worry about watering during the week, because we put in this amazing system from a company called DripWorks, which sells these incredibly customizable systems, and they will help you like crazy, and they're great. So I'm already growing stuff, like my boxes is getting ready. And of course now I feel like it's too small. The boxes are 8x4 and it's not enough space. I need more boxes. And I know that there are a few people who said they wanted to do this who won't do it, and I know they'll drop out. So I anticipate that by the end of June I will have two or three more boxes, because I think some people bit off more than they could chew. So what am I growing there now this year? Well, I already put in my sugar snap peas, because we built this whole thing right up next to a tennis court. And so there's like a, you know, 20-foot fence. So I, wise person that I am, chose one of the boxes right next to the tennis court so I could take advantage of that fence. So I put in my sugar snappies so they can grow right up the fence. And I planted lots of leafy things. I wanted a lot of leafy things. And I also put in green beans. I've never grown any green beans except back at home when I was a little kid. I got this variety called Provider green beans that are supposed to be really bounteous. And I also put in sunflowers, because I love sunflowers and I've always wanted them. But every time I plant seeds for sunflowers, the birds just come and eat the seeds right out of the ground and laugh at me. So I guess the birds could actually fly right into this thing again, couldn't they? There's no roof on it. Well, whatever. I'll try. Next week I'll put in the tomatoes, because those I just buy in plants from the green market. I don't bother with seeds for tomatoes. And last fall, I think I even did a show about this. I talked about this squash that I bought at the Grand Army Plaza Farmers Market in October or November. The most amazingly delicious hard shell squash I've ever eaten. I can't remember the name. It was some Thai variety, I think. It was great. So after I ate that, I saved the seeds, and those have been started also. And so all weekend we were working on this project, and people kept kind of looking at what I was doing, and they, you know, kept saying, "Ooh, what's Erica growing? What's she going to do? What's she going to do?" Because I would say 90% of them have never actually gardened. They've never done it beyond maybe putting in a few, you know, potted annuals or something. So the whole vegetable thing is really new to them, and I'm shocked at how clueless people are about growing vegetables. I thought everybody grew up with a garden and sort of knows how to do it. So there's this great book called Square Foot Gardening, and I told them they should get it, so they all ordered it on Amazon. But I think they're kind of overwhelmed, and I'm overwhelmed too, but I really think with gardening you need to just plow right in, so to speak. I think, you know, lots of trial and error, like in anything. But my objective is to grow food. You know, sunflowers I like, but really what I want is food. Why would you grow anything else but food? Why would you grow flowers if you have this fenced-in place? And specifically leafy food, things like chard and arugula and the green beans, of course. You know, I like to grow stuff that has a lot of payoff for the effort. You know, I want value. I'm thrifty. I want value. So I want to grow stuff where you can keep picking it and it keeps growing. That's why I like leafy things. That's why I like sugar snaps. I'm not going to waste my time on something like a watermelon. You know, you wait like all summer till the fall and then you get one stupid little watermelon. So everybody keeps asking me, what should I grow? What should I grow? What should I grow? And I just say, grow what you want to eat. So people are like, oh, should I grow onions? Should I grow broccoli? And I'm like, well, you know, grow something where you get a good payoff. And so somebody was like, I want to grow daikon. I said, the box is only a foot deep. You can't grow daikon. You have to think about this. Think it through. And somebody else wants to grow grapes. He's like, I have a heart condition. I need to eat grapes. I'm going to grow grapes. Like, dude, grapes in a little 4x8 foot garden box? Think about it. Seriously? Like, think about it. Whatever, I'm trying not to let them bother me. I'm just very happy to have my new garden box, that it will not become a salad bar for the critters of upper New York State, and I don't have to be there to water every day of the week. I grow what I like to eat. Makes sense, right? So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more about leaves and mucking around in the dirt.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 3:30 p.m., tune in to We Dig Plants with garden designers Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg of Groundworks, Inc. The girls delve into our human relationship with plants as food, medicine, fodder, and a source of beauty and inspiration. They bring the culture to horticulture and discuss such topics as botany how-to, cultivation, horticultural history, garden design trends, and all things generally budding. Again, that's every Sunday at 3:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. So, speaking of gardening, I love Alice and Carmen. Those guys are great. And Alice and Carmen actually get a big shout out because they found me a home for my bees. My bees became homeless this season and I was really stressing out. They had nowhere to live, and Alice and Carmen found me a home with their head gardener, Allie. Thank you so much, Alice and Carmen. Not only do we dig plants, we dig you guys too. And the bees seem pretty happy there. So anyway, we're talking about gardening, and I was talking about greens and the things that I like to grow and the things that I like to eat. It makes sense to grow what you want to eat, right? I mean, people always grow things like green peppers. I hate green peppers. I don't want to eat those. I'm not going to grow them. I like bitter greens. I like arugula, mizuna, mustard greens, red chard, spotted trout, lettuce. I have all those growing now. Like I said earlier, I want payoff. I don't want to wait around all summer and fall for one stunted watermelon. I want salad. I want sautéed greens. I want them now. I want them at the end of the summer. I want it all. I like those greens. I like to cook them up with my eggs in the morning. I like to have them with my grilled mackerel at night. And they're so easy. That's the thing. Like, I put in arugula seeds April 10th, and I was eating arugula 2 days ago. I love that. That's such a, like, beautiful, miraculous thing. And so then, coincidentally, this week I was teaching, and it was salad day. We have a day in our curriculum where we make salad, and such perfect timing, because I was telling them about my garden and how I was growing my arugula, and it comes up in 3 weeks, and you can eat it. And we got into a big discussion of how to properly wash and dry salad greens, because I have to teach them that, of course. And, you know, I think what's happened is a lot of people now just buy the bagged, pre-washed greens. So they don't really understand how to process greens until, I mean, these guys, they'll go out and they'll work in a restaurant, they'll have to wash a lot of greens. But, you know, you're a basic home eater, home cook. And even I'm guilty of it. I buy the bags of pre-washed baby arugula in the winter. I know it makes me a bad locavore, but I can't help it. And it's not like I'm buying tomatoes in the winter to go with it. But even that bagged stuff is pre-washed, but it really should be rewashed. You really should wash it again, even though they say triple washed. They found, you know, you find stuff in it sometimes. They've had E. coli outbreaks from bagged greens, although washing it won't kill the E. coli. That won't do anything. But so I was teaching them how to properly wash greens, which is to immerse the greens in a big amount of cold water, like fill up a sink, give them a really good swishing around, then lift the greens out. Because what happens, they'll swish around and all the dirt will fall to the bottom of the sink, and then you lift the greens out and drain the sink. And then repeat until there's no dirt and no grit at all left in the sink. And I have to stress how important it is to really clean greens well. Because if you've ever bitten into a gritty lettuce leaf, you know what sort of hell that can be. How miserable. So every little speck of sand and grit has to come out. And the more we get into local produce season, the dirtier the greens get. Because local farmers don't have the massive processing plants that the big agri-giants have out in the West and in Florida and Mexico. So they're not going to wash the stuff. They just pick it, put it on the truck, and bring it to us, which is great, but it's always dirtier. And so, you know, I was digging around in all that dirt over the weekend and then planting in my big, huge, well, not so huge box of dirt. I'd like it to be bigger, but I'm still enjoying it nonetheless. And then teaching salad prep during the week on Monday. It was like total dirt and leaves immersion, 48 hours. So I started actually thinking back to my early days as a line cook back in the early 90s in New York. And I worked for a couple different restaurants back then who were really ahead of the curve. These were guys who were buying directly from farmers, buying from the farmers market, doing the whole like local seasonal thing, like a full decade before it became what is now the norm. You know, if you don't do it now, you're seen as kind of what's wrong with you. But these guys were like way, way ahead. You know, this was the era of like kiwis and sun-dried tomatoes and exotic, you know, baby imported vegetables. And these guys were buying local greens and, you know, local fish and stuff like that. So that was pretty cool. But since we were buying our greens right from the farm, they weren't washed, they weren't processed at all, and they were, of course, not sprayed with any pesticides, so they were often full of bugs. And they weren't bad bugs, they were good bugs, things like spiders and ladybugs, which you want. But they were still in there because they'd, you know, cut the greens and put them in the crate, and that was it. And washing them didn't always get the greens, get the bugs out of the greens. You know, some bugs can swim. So sometimes you'd take some greens and you'd toss them with dressing and you'd put them on a plate and send it out with the waiter, and the waiter would set down the salad, and a few minutes later a little spider would come crawling out of the salad onto the rim of the plate. And so the waiters were trained to explain to the guests that the reason there was a spider living in your salad is because those greens were so organic and so chemical free that the seeing that spider in there was actually a great thing, because it meant that the greens were this healthy ecosystem that allowed these beneficial bugs to thrive. I mean, talk about spin, you know. And this was, like I said, 10 years before everybody was all hopped up on local and sustainable. This was, you know, people were still unaware of that sort of thing. And so I was telling my students this story because I wanted to emphasize how important it was that they wash the greens really well, even though sometimes you won't get the bugs out of the greens. And also that day we were using watercress, and I have had watercress come in where, if you really look at it closely, they're actually teeny tiny little snails living on it, in teeny tiny little snail shells, like the size of like a sesame seed. And if you don't get those off, you're gonna crunch down. One of your customers will bite down on that and that could be really bad, break a tooth or worse. So you have to pick through that watercress, be really careful. Remember, it grows in water. That's why it's called watercress. Snails live in water. So these are just things that when I'm teaching, I really want to emphasize how important it is, you know, triple wash your greens, especially things like spinach. Spinach like sand, and they're always really sandy. I got some great spinach when I was in Florida 2 weeks ago from a farm stand, and it was really delicious, but it was really sandy. I washed it probably 4 times. And all this kind of takes me back even more, not just to when I was that line cook in the early 90s, but a little bit later in the mid 90s when I worked in Maine. I worked at a summer resort on a big lake in Maine called Lake Kezar, and I was the sous chef at this resort. It was only open for the summer. We were open 10 weeks a year, and that was it. It was a beautiful place. I loved it. I miss it. Sometimes I go back now. And it's Maine, so it never gets that hot, and there you don't need any air conditioning. So all the buildings were just these really nice kind of rustic wooden lodge buildings with screened windows and doors. Nothing was closed up because nothing was air conditioned, and we weren't open in the winter, so it didn't have to be. And so sometimes, because we were way out in the woods, nature would come visiting. And so we would be serving dinner, and little chipmunks would come scurrying through the kitchen, scurrying through the bakery, and scurry out into the dining room and go running across people's feet in the dining room. And some guests found it really charming. It was like, you know, being in a Disney film. And some guests weren't so happy, but you know, yet again, we put a little spin on it. We told people that, you know, it was an enchanted kind of place. And the chipmunks were totally harmless, and so were the spiders in the salad. If you ate the spider in salad, you'd be fine. You'd just, you know, more protein. But then one summer, nature really came calling in this hotel. And one day during lunch service, we were finishing up lunch service, and there was a different dessert every day, each meal. You know, we had a pastry department, and they would make a homemade dessert for each meal. And so usually the pastry chef would kind of lay out the plates and lay things out, but then the waiters had to do finishing touches, like if there was ice cream involved or some kind of sauce, the waiters would do those as they needed them for the tables. And so we're finishing up lunch service one day, and we suddenly hear a scream and a loud clatter in the bakery of metal landing on concrete floor. And we went running into the bakery, which was adjacent to the kitchen. And there was one of the waitresses holding a ladle that had been used in our hot fudge sauce. We had profiteroles on the lunch menu for dessert that day. And profiteroles are like a cream puff pastry, like a pâte à choux cream puff pastry that you bake in little puffs, and then you cut them open and you put ice cream inside, like a ball of ice cream, and then you cover it with a hot chocolate sauce over that. That's a profiterole. We had them on the menu. And so the screaming waitress was standing there holding the ladle that was used to stir and pour this hot chocolate sauce that was kept over a burner in the pastry kitchen. And on the ladle was a little teeny tiny mousey, little field mouse from the woods, who had accidentally fallen into the chocolate sauce and drowned. And he drowned clinging to the ladle. So it was a little chocolate-covered mouse clinging to the ladle. So she went to serve her profiteroles, picked up the ladle, and saw the little mouse dead on the ladle, screamed, dropped it. We all come running in, saw this situation. And then the other waiters heard the commotion and came in, and one of them said, "You know, all throughout lunch service, I thought that there was just a big lump of unmelted chocolate in the sauce, and I just kept stirring it and stirring it every time I served, trying to get it to melt, and it just wouldn't melt. And now I understand that it wasn't a lump of chocolate at all. It was a little dead field mouse in the chocolate." So apparently this mouse had been in there almost the entire time, if not from maybe the night before. And we had been serving these profiteroles with mouse-infused chocolate sauce over them. So we very quickly dumped the sauce, got a new one going, and all got together and took a vow of eternal secrecy and eternal silence, that the owner of the hotel would never, ever find out about it. And from that day on, the profiteroles became known, of course, as the profiterodents, and we kept them on the menu. Now, I don't know if Jane, the owner of the hotel, who I'm still friendly with, listens to my show. I don't think so. But the cat's out of the bag now. She probably doesn't remember it. It was a really long time ago. I hope she doesn't remember it. But it's just something to keep in mind, that not only do you need to be very careful about spiders in your salad greens and snails in your watercress and other critters running through your dining room, but be careful about what falls into your food, because if you're out there in the woods of Maine, you never know who's going to come calling. I mean, we used to see moose on the road all the time. But this poor little mousie, at least he died or she died in chocolate. I mean, if you're going to drown, you may as well drown in a 1 gallon vat of warm, bittersweet chocolate sauce, right? It's probably better than being eaten in somebody's salad, I would think. Anyway, we are just about out of time tonight. But, yeah, we are just about out of time. So that's it. I just wanted to say thanks to Jack in the control room, as always. I don't always remember to thank him, but he's the best. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. And now here's some behind-the-scenes food news with Katie Kiefer.
Guess what? Food prices will likely continue to rise given the fact that corn planting is lagging way behind last year. According to Drover's Cattle Network, planting is down 53%, which will undoubtedly put more of a squeeze on livestock farmers, especially pork and chicken farmers, because after all, they're the ones who use more corn than anybody else in terms of livestock production. Here's a quote from the Drover's Cattle Network. 13% of the corn in the top 18 producing states has been planted, according to the USDA's Crop Progress Report, which was released on May 2nd. Although it is a 4% improvement from last week, nationally, the 2011 corn planting is 27% behind the five-year average and 53% behind 2010's progress. And this is no doubt likely to bad weather, drought conditions in various places, and more rain in others. Who knows? But whatever it is, look to see your grocery bills rising over the next few months. This is Katie Kiefer for Behind the Scenes Food News.
Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum, hanging out with the guys from 124 Rabbit Club. We got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah,
tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really... that was.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top-quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured, smoked, boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.